Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Time for This Week in Chicago History with Anna DeVlantis. Good morning, Anna. We were just talking with Dean about Walt Disney, and this is a historic week going back, isn't it?
It sure is, Bob, and good morning to you. This week in 1928, almost 100 years ago, Chicago native Walt Disney debuted his character, Mickey Mouse, in theaters, and it wasn't an instant success because no distributor wanted to pick up his animated shorts back then. Initially called Mortimer Mouse. His wife said that was going to be too pompous a name for a mouse, so changed it to Mickey. A lot happened, of course, after that, and became a success a few years later, not all that long. But back to his Chicago roots, Bob, that I know you and Dean, you mentioned Walt Disney, and he played a role. It just played a big role in who he was as a person. He said he started out tracing the cartoons in the newspaper. He lived in a home early part of his life, a modest home that his parents built on the Northwest Side, and he became a cartoonist for the high school newspaper here in Chicago, attended night school at the Chicago Academy of Fine Arts before leaving for Hollywood at the age of 21, and started producing more of these animated shorts. I came up with something, Bob, that I think you'll really appreciate. A little known fact about Mickey Mouse: the first few animated shorts, of course, that Disney did were music beds only. There was no dialogue. But when Mickey first spoke, 1929, any idea, Bob, what his first words were?
Oh, I thought you were going to say, who was the voice? I think it was Walt. First words?
Yes,
no. One small step for a rodent? I don't know. What was it?
I'm guessing these might have been your first words too, Bob. Listen, and we pulled the audio.
Hot dog! Hot dog! Hot dog! Hot dog!
Oh, he's hungry.
Were those your first words? I was just wondering. It made me think of you. He said his first words were hot dog, and it became his signature expression. You know, the opening jingle of Mickey Mouse Club to this day, any parent with kids over the last 20 years knows it well. That he still sings the hot diggity dog.
When you said Walt Disney Chicago roots may have provided some inspiration, I thought you were going to say that he was on the lower level of Whacker and saw a rat and got the idea, but I guess not.
That's not how the story goes.
Let's talk about something that opened up here in Chicago this week in 1976.
Marriott's Great America opened to the public, and Marriott, of course, known then, still known today, as a hotel chain. They wanted to branch out from hotels and hospitality and get into theme parks. So that was the plan. Three of them initially planned, two on the East Coast, one in Gurnee, servicing both the Chicago and Milwaukee areas. That was the plan. The Tribune broke the story that several hundred acres had been bought up in Gurnee and they were being assembled for an amusement park. And there was a ton of excitement at the time, you'll recall. Maybe you remember the first. Do you remember the first time you went through the gates there, Bob? You would have been a little older.
John Landecker and I were at opening night. It was a promotion, and we were there. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, I just remember as a kid going past that giant reflection pond and up to the carousel, the double-decker carousel. It wasn't Disney World, but it felt so magical at the time. I mean, every kid growing up at that time saw those ads on TV and then begged their parents to take them to Great America. Mm-hmm. We actually pulled one of those ads, Bob, for you. A little less than a year after Great America opened, this ad airing on local television, telling you all the fun that could be had at Great America.
Just crack of dawn, we're turning things on. There's a lot to be done, so you can have fun. We're rolling out our tidal wave that shoots across dry land, and practicing all our favorite tunes while polishing up the band. We're cranking up the thrills that are sure to give you chills.
We got a great day for you, cause there's so much to do at Marriott's Great America.
I remember the jingles, and it's now Six Flags, isn't it?
Six Flags, it's changed hands a number of times over the years, of course. And it's expanded. You know, they've got a water park now. They host concerts there. They've got Fright Fest around Halloween time. And it's still a big destination. Still going strong.
We'll get to Spider-Man and more this week in Chicago history with Anna DeVlantis coming right up. Bob Sirac, WGN. Continuing with This Week in Chicago History, and our city had a superhero visitor on Memorial Day weekend of 1981. Anna?
I don't know how welcome he was. He was fascinating to watch, that's for sure. It's something many people listening right now will remember. 1981, 25-year-old man wearing a homemade Spider-Man costume with suction cups attached to his hands and feet while he scaled the Sears Tower. All 110 stories of it. Dan Goodwin, nicknamed Spider Dan by the media, was an experienced rock climber. This was his first building climb, though, not his last. We all know that. A few days before the climb, he checked into a hotel room across the street from the Sears to study building security, then put on his Spider-Man suit, eventually on Memorial Day, and scaled the world's tallest building. During the climb, you may remember this because it was broadcast wall-to-wall on a lot of local television stations. Fire department crews were unfurling scaffolding. They were trying to grab him along the way. But he didn't want that. He just went around him and waved. And the city was captivated by all this. We did pull some of the news coverage at the time. The city really riveted by what was happening, wondering, would he make it? What would happen?
Chicagoans awoke on the morning of May 25th, 1981, to an extraordinary sight. Scampering up the side of what was then the Sears Tower, the world's tallest building, was a man. On closer inspection, a Spider-Man. Dan Goodwin.
I'm form. I wish he makes the top.
I'm surprised they're letting him do it. Is it authorized?
Of course it wasn't. Goodwin would make it to the top of the Sears that day, would be arrested, and then 6 months later, he would do it all over again at the John Hancock Center.
There, he was nearly washed off the building, was arrested again, and cemented his status as a folk hero in Chicago. Spider Dan says today that the Chicago Fire Department was furious about what he had done, and that Commissioner William Blair gave him a stern warning.
If you ever try climbing a building in my city again, I'll kill you. And I looked down and said, are you kidding me? He says, I'm dead serious. If you try climbing a building in my city, I'll kill you.
Think about that. The fire commissioner gave Goodwin a very direct, very stern warning. Stay away from Chicago and its buildings. So what did Goodwin do? Naturally, he came back.
Yeah, NBC5's Phil Rogers there. But actually, it was a fire that motivated Spider Dan to do this, wasn't it?
Yeah, often left out. And I don't know how significant it is to anyone, but there's a very interesting backstory to the whole thing. It's to me, I think, Dan Goodwin wasn't just a daredevil. He was struck by the fire at the MGM Hotel in Las Vegas that killed 85 people stuck and trapped on upper floors. And it was the year before his climb. And he set out to try to, in his mind, he was trying to reform rescue techniques. He had actually visited the local fire chief in Las Vegas and tried to appeal to him to say, hey, there are ways you can do this. You can rescue people by suctioning up the side of a building. But the fire chief, you know, wasn't really interested in his crazy ideas. He said he climbed the Sears Tower and later many other buildings to try to prove his point.
All right, now let's get to some blues history.
Almost time for Blues Fest, Bob. It starts June 9th, next week, actually. Always held in early June, ever since Blues Fest was founded back in 1984. Celebrating the city's storied history with blues music and blues musicians, legendary blues musicians. Credit Lois Weisberg for the whole thing. She was the celebrated Commissioner of Cultural Affairs for the city under Daley. She came up with this idea that why don't we have this big weekend festival celebrating blues music? And it was free, too, which was a pretty cool thing. Still free to this day. She's the one who also gave us cows on parade, by the way. So we've got a lot to be thankful for.
That's right.
It's pretty cool.
And it's amazing that this was the week back in 1988 that we had, I guess it was at the first of the school shooting. And who could have imagined that we would have this going on still today? Tell us about this.
Very little, it feels, has changed. I'd say Bob is true about reaction to it or prevention of it, school shootings. This was Lori Dann, and anybody who was alive at that time, you in the Chicago area, you'll know the name Lori Dann and probably be haunted by her and what she did that day. She just simply brought terror to the community. It had a day-long rampage, bizarre behavior that culminated with her walking into a second-grade classroom at Hubbard Woods Elementary in Winnetka. She opened fire on innocent children, shot five of them, killed a little boy named Nicholas Corwin. And it just, you know, it's just ingrained in so many of our memories years later. The Tribune has posted right now an excellent piece this week that takes a look back, remembering the victims and also the survivors and the trauma that stays with them throughout their lives afterwards. There was a second grade teacher who was a substitute in that classroom, the only adult to witness the shooting, and says she still lives with the guilt that she couldn't save those kids.
1988, and we haven't done much to prevent them. Thank you, Anna. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday.
Thanks, Bob.